Hi, my name is Sean Lay, and I am a veteran. I spent 20 years in the U.S. Navy, and now I am a YouTuber or content creator.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all of...
Thanks for coming on, Sean. I've been following you ever since I got started years ago. Where did you grow up when you came from Vietnam?
Well, first of all, thanks, Ken, for having me. I appreciate you sending me the invitation. And just a little bit about me. I grew up in Minnesota. I came here when I was like 12, 12 and a half-ish. And I went to school there, graduate from high school, and then I joined the military. And after I got out, I started a YouTube channel. Actually, I started when I was still in the military, talking about how to join the military, because back then I was a recruiter. So I started out making videos just, you know, purely about the military and how to join, the benefits. So that's a little bit about my background.
Got it. And when you were growing up in Minnesota, probably the only way out of Minnesota would probably be the military, or, you know, you go away to college, right?
Correct. You got it, man. the traditional Vietnamese way is to go to college, because, in my family, I got like 6 siblings, and my older brother and sister, they didn't go to college, at least to the university, right? Yeah. So I was about to be the first one to go to college, because believe it or not, I was kind of surprised that I did pretty well in school.
Yeah.
But then something was telling me that, you know, I need to get out of here. I need to do something with my life. Living in Minnesota, you know, the cold weather for a little over 6 years, I felt kind of depressed, actually.
Yeah.
And the moment that I had an idea that I want to join the military was when the recruiter came to my school, and I just saw, you know, I saw his white uniform. That's just something that really gave me a spark, you know. And I looked through the brochure. Wow, you get to travel to Hong Kong, to Hawaii, to all the wonderful places in the world. And that's kind of got my interest at that point.
And what was your MOS when you first joined?
I was into logistic. So I was assigned to a squadron doing aviation logistic.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
No, not really.
Really?
It was boring, man. But I get to travel, you know, I get to travel the world. I've seen a lot of places.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I worked with you say you were in the Marines, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I had a squadron, just like a sister brother division, was on the carrier with me, and who was a Marine. I had a really good memory with them.
Oh, wow. Did you make a lot of friends, Vietnamese friends, while you were in the Navy?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
I joined in 93 and got out in 97.
Crap, how are you?
You know, when I look at you, I'm like, I hope I'm old. I hope I'm younger than you, man. Because you look like a very young man. But I'm like, yeah. When did you join?
2001.
Oh, wow. Wow. So I'm a little bit older than you.
Yeah. Yeah. You got me.
I joined when I was 17.
Oh, okay.
But you know, Sean, when I look back, sometimes I think I should have stayed in, because the 4 years go by so quick, and I got out when I was 21, and I should have just stayed in for another, 16? You did 20 years, right?
Yeah, I did 20.
And it goes by like that. And now you're like a young man and you have your whole life ahead of you, and you don't ever have to really worry about money.
Well, not exactly, you know. I mean, the money is good. It's decent. It's enough, you know. At least I know that for my pension, you know, I'm not going to be starved with my whole life. I can just quit and do nothing right now.
Yeah.
It's not going to make you rich or anything.
No, not rich, but you'll never have to worry.
Right. I'm blessed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
20 years. And, you know, yeah, it goes by so quick. And, you know, all these young people, you know, 20 years is not a long time. That's what I want to say to a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like forever, though. You know, when I was in, looking back, when I hit my 10 year, I was going to get out, you know, but then my boss talked me out of it. He's like, well, you already did halfway, you know, might as well stay in. So when I hit my 12, my 13 years, and all I was looking toward was like,
getting out.
Okay, give me that light at the end of the tunnel. I want to retire, because I figure out at 13 years, like, this is not for me. Yeah. You know, like I was ready to get out, but I had my, you know, situation, my family circumstances. So, you know, I had to stick it out.
But what would you have done if you got out at 13, 14 years anyway?
I would have gone back to college. I tell you that. Mm. Because remember I said I was really good at school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was lazy, but I had a thing for school. You know, I was doing very well. And I thought I was going to go to school to be a lawyer. But then when I decided I was going to do 20 years, I started go to school and did everything online. And I picked the easiest one that I could. So I got a history degree, man. Don't laugh at me for that.
I got an anthro degree, so it's the same. But now I get it. I understand it a little bit more. I understand you a little bit more, because the things that you say in Vietnamese is very, I don't know how you say it, yom, right? It's
what?
So much yom. There's a lot of charm, but a lot of information packed in the things that you talk about. And I think picking something that you say is the easiest subject. Well, history is not that easy, right? I mean, if you think about it, there's a lot of factual things that you have to remember to piece right. together to make these arguments.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I wanted to, I was very intrigued in world wars. Mm. So I had a history major, but it's focused on World War II, actually, because I love talking about like guns, military, you know, invasion, defensive tactics, all sort of things. So I love World War II. And I love the Vietnam War. So I study a lot about the Vietnam War. But fortunately for me, you know, living in this community in Little Saigon, I get to meet a lot of, you know, the people that been there, went through the war,
yeah.
and was captured as prisoner. Some of them for like 17 years. I get to interview them. So I, lucky enough, the guy that love history, get to understand, you know, a new perspective, not in a textbook, you know, from America, not in a textbook in Vietnam, but from the real person that actually experienced it. So yeah, that was a lucky thing for me.
This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. I love cooking with Red Boat because it's made with only two ingredients, wild-caught anchovies and sea salt. This premium fish sauce is made in Phu Quoc, Vietnam, and bottled right here in California. You can find Red Boat at select Asian supermarkets like 99 Ranch, H Mart, and Tung Fak. Sean, what do you think is some of the biggest differences between what you knew before you got into this work mm-hmm. versus today? The difference in terms of what you've heard from people who have been in the war, the back that you've talked to and you've learned from with the historical information coming out of their mouth. How is it different from what you grew up knowing?
A lot, tremendously, because I don't know if you said you were born here, right?
Correct. I was born here.
So, okay. So the difference between me and you is that I got the education over there, at least the elementary education, but I was old enough as 12 year old to understand, you know, the things that they taught me. And coming to America, it was just a
something
new... yeah, obviously, you know, something was off big time. And that's when I realized that, hey, you know what? Everything that I learned in the past is kind of like not true at all.
Fuzzy, you man. Know? Yeah.
Yeah, because now I'm talking to a person that been there, done that, you know? And I can tell when a person, you know, not being truthful to me or not. That is something that I'm gifted at. So I was very lucky, man. Just learning new things, seeing new perspective, meeting the people from the war. I would say I actually went to somebody, not somebody, but I can't remember his name now, but a back. I call him a back.
Mm-hmm.
He actually flew the plane to the north of Vietnam and did all the bombing campaign. I went to his house. I interviewed him. He had pictures with General, you know, Nguyễn Cao Kỳ. You heard of him, right?
Yes, I know who he is.
And he told me these stories, and it was fantastic.
And does this, I'm curious now to know that, okay, so you know the other side of all of this history as a result of the work that you've been doing the last few years. And then you speak up a lot about the sort of the differences in the way that governments, how different the governments are, because the important thing for you, I think, in your program is the truth, right? Is
right.
Getting at the truth by going hard at the truth. And for me, going hard at the truth, I don't have the courage yet to do that sometimes when we're talking about politics or when we're talking about things, because I still want that relationship with Vietnam. I want to go back. And for me, being born in the United States, it comes with this sort of detachment from the politics side of like people who left when they were 12 years old. You know, like I have friends who left when they're 12 and they're adamantly against the whatever the government's doing because they want the truth. They want human rights. They want all these things. So You are working in that world where you are hearing the truth coming from the political prisoners and all of this. But does that hold you back from your relationship with Vietnam, going to Vietnam, having presence in Vietnam?
Does that hold me back?
Yeah.
No, because if you're looking at the context, it's not. You have to define who your, I don't want to use the word enemy, but who are you speaking against of? Like, I'm all for human rights. You know, I support the prisoner of, what's the term that they call? Conscience, right?
Yep.
I hear them. I feel their pain. And I consider myself as a victim too. Even though I never been to the war, but the things that I was taught in school, I was lied to. I was brainwashed when I lived over there. So I have nothing but love for Vietnam and especially for the people.
Of course.
If I didn't love the people, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's some disagreement, not with the people, but with the government, with who is in charge. Right. So we have to be very clear about that.
Yeah. I understand. I mean, it's this whole raging debate with, you know, that situation with Israel, the Israeli government, the Israeli people, very different from the actual governments that are doing these things that harm the people in the country that we're talking about. And I think, you know, when we're talking about governments, it's a very different conversation.
Right.
Now, do you go to Vietnam quite often or do you not go at all?
No. I can't even remember the last time that I went back, probably 12, 13 years ago, but I haven't been back since.
Do you wish to go back?
I don't have a reason to. I mean, I love everything about Vietnam except for the weather.
Yeah.
And the environment. I get sick every time I go over there. I don't know why. Maybe I'm allergic to the air over there. You know, it's always like dust flying around everywhere,
right.
And people have to cover their face when they go out. But I don't like the weather. Even the food. I think the food here, you know, is much better. The only thing I like over there is the people. You know, the friendliness. You know, get to visit my neighbors. Back in the day, even though they don't know who I am, they don't remember who I am. So those are the interesting about Vietnam.
Yeah. It's funny that you bring up the food because the food in Orange County is top notch. You know, it's hard to compete with the ingredients that are coming out of Orange County. California has really good produce, very fresh stuff, high quality meats. And I think for the most part, it's harder to find that kind of stuff in Vietnam. No matter how good the cooking technique or the flavor is, you know, the ingredients is where you start with the cooking.
Yeah, it's the quality, of the food.
Yeah, it really is. But, you know, I really want to go into something that I talked to you about. Your Vietnamese language skills are so good. And, you know, you came at 12 and, you know, there's a lot of people who forget the language at 12. How the hell did you get so damn good at Vietnamese?
I don't know, man. It's weird because my, you know, during my time in school, we didn't speak Vietnamese in school. We didn't have that many Vietnamese people around in Minnesota. Even though we, you know, I do have friends, but a small group of friends, but we don't see each other every day. Even when I joined the military, you know, it's America military, right? We use English. So I had to, I don't know if you remember in 2018 when there was an event, there was a big protest in Vietnam. And thousands of people took the street protesting against the CCP, right? And I was very intrigued by that event. And I watched it. I stay up all night watching it. And then next day I went to work like all tired and shit. But I stay up and I watch. I listen to their message and what they get to say. So since that time, I started to be more concerned. I was more concerned about their message. So I started doing research. You know, I went online and I, you know, went on Facebook and I looked at all the blogs, you know, and different people sharing their opinions. And I just read a lot. I just consume a lot of content on Facebook, you know, and that's how I picked up my Vietnamese language.
2018,
right?
But you had some sort of Vietnamese training, obviously. You learned up to elementary school.
Dude, yeah, yes.
12 years old. So you had a good foundation. But damn, right. the some of the words that you use is like, it's on the street level that makes it funny. And then you introduce factual history, politics, the conversation that makes it so hấp dẫn. It makes it so charming and interesting.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I understand the allure of your audience when they're listening, because it's really funny stuff, but serious subject matter that's made very funny by the way you talk.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It takes a lot of time. I mean, 2018, but you were right. I had a good foundation, you know. I always have always been, you know, the top five, not to brag about it, but top five student in my class, you know, back in Vietnam. I mastered the language of Vietnamese, especially Vietnamese literature, poetry. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, when I went to school, I was always ahead. At least that's how I felt, you know. I was always ahead of my peers group, and they call me Uncle Nong, you know.
Yeah.
So I had that foundation. And then when I went to America, you know, we didn't really use it, you know, on a daily basis. And I just watch a lot of movies, you know, Hong Kong movies that translate into Vietnamese. And that's how I maintain my language, the Vietnamese language proficiency. And then when I really became concerned with the stories in Vietnam 2018, that's when I start like diving deep into like reading, consuming a lot of content, and just learning and growing from there.
Let's say I have every day, I have 2 hours. If you know, I read and write and I have a decent foundation, but I want to get really good at it, right? And I'm using this as a sort of an example for the audience that, you know, majority of my audience are English listeners that are Vietnamese, but all throughout the world. And we want to get better. If I had 2 hours a day, where would you spend most of it? Would you watch YouTube more, or would you read newspaper? What would you do to improve your language skills?
Both YouTube and Facebook. I'm on social media a lot. What I would say is that you have to find what you're passionate about, you know, the content that you're passionate about. And then you just go from there. If you don't like the things that you're reading, then yeah, it's going to be really hard for you to learn. But I only read about something that I'm interested in.
And what you're interested in is like history, politics, that sort of talk.
Yep.
Yeah, and when you team up with other guys to give your commentary, it is entertainment. Mm-hmm. It is very entertaining to watch.
Thank you.
And I understand, like, years ago when I was following you, you had a separate channel. And is the recent channel a new channel? I mean, I was a little bit confused recently when I went on to your recent stuff. Did you have a previous channel before?
I do. I had a bigger channel, but right now they locked me out. You know, I said something that maybe I didn't supposed to say or whatever, but they told me that, you know, some community, what do they call it? Community standard I violated, whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm locked out temporarily. After 90 days, I don't know if I'm going to get it back, but we'll see. But the channel that you're seeing right now is my new channel.
Wow. Hey, can we talk a little bit about the dangers of the content creators that we do? We're people who make content, and something like that is literally something that can stop your life, right?
Yeah.
Is that something that you calculate before you say something, or is it something that you said and it just got flagged and you got caught with it? Is this something like you made a calculation, like, I'm going to say this, and if I get in trouble, it doesn't matter? Or was this something that you accidentally slipped out?
A little bit of both. I do think about, well, at least I hope, you know, I think about carefully before I say something.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, when you say something that you not even realize that it's going to be a problem. That's the thing. And you're never going to know if it's a problem until it come back against you. But for the most part, I do, you know, carefully choose my words. We only speak on the fact, and we put out a disclaimer. This is only our opinions.
Yeah.
Right. It's strictly our opinions and nothing else. We don't fabricate the news. We speak on the news and we put proof on the screen, you know, whether it's from Fox News, CNN, or the news in Vietnam, whatever the case may be. And then we just provide our opinions. That's it. Yeah.
But do you think we live in a real, true and free society if it gets blocked that way?
You know, I don't believe there's a black and white area. There's always some gray area in between. And it depends on how you interpret it, you know? Perception is everything. And to me, there's something, you know, when I talk about a story and I give my opinions, or even an interview that I conducted, right? In my eyes, I think it's okay, right?
Yeah.
My interviewee have the freedom to say whatever the hell you want.
Right, right.
Right? As long as it's not like, not trying to harm anybody.
Right.
You know, not trying to hurt anybody. Then it's okay. At least that's his opinion. But in other people's eyes, you know, they might not take it well. Right? So it's all about perception, in my opinion.
Right. But, you know, we could, and that's the thing. We as content, people who make content are, I am still floating in the safe zone all the time. I'm just trying to be safe, trying to say things that are like, you know, stir up your imagination and get you to think about certain things. But at the same time, I would never at this point in my career go off on a limb and say the things that I would say in private because of the, you know, the nature of just getting cut off like that.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's the thing about me. I'm very outspoken, you know. I'm very outspoken, at least on my platform.
Yeah.
I might not be like that all the time, but when we talk about a certain subject and I feel that I'm passionate about, then I'm going to let it all out. You know, I don't care about a consequence. At least I know that I'm not trying to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to, give false information. It's just strictly my opinions.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that we can change the hearts and minds of the audience that are paying attention to what we're doing?
In term of what?
Ideas. Do you think that
heart and mind?
Yeah. What I mean by that is, you know, like when you think about, let's say, Vietnam, the certain ways that they viewed their government. Mm-hmm. And when we speak on that, when we talk about certain issues that are strange to us, right? That's weird. It's like, wait, the government's doing that. The education level of that minister is right there. Like, oh, that's weird, right? We talk about it and we make fun of these things
Right.
But does that, do you think it changes the hearts and minds of the audience in Vietnam to perhaps do something about it one day, or, you know, stand up, or does it affect change the way we comment on things?
Change, like, do you mean like in change of how they look at their leaders?
Sure.
How they view the society,
yeah.
or
yeah,
how change they where they want to take action?
All of it. Do you
all
think
of it.
That our words, our perception, when we comment on how funny or strange and how weird these things are, does it change society in Vietnam or even here in Little Saigon?
I would hope that it do, right? And to some degree, I think that, at least I'm hoping that I'm making a change. But what I can tell you is this. People deserve to hear the truth, right? And once they hear the truth, and they can make a decision for themselves, whether, you know, it will change their perception or it will not change anything at all, is on them. But from my experience, you know, the fact that I'm seeing my audience is growing a lot, that tell me something, right? That tell me something, that my message is actually getting across. And they actually listen to the truth and, you know, and analyze it based on my opinion. You know, to a certain degree, it does make an impact.
Yeah. Now, what would you say is your direction in your channel, and what is the sort of the main focus of what you of your message?
Okay, so just like you, I love having conversation. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, whether you disagree with me or you agree with me, I don't care. But I feel like conversations are needed.
Yeah.
Right? Everywhere. And it's not going to be a one-way conversation. I love two-way conversation. And that's not a good thing in Vietnam, right? It's definitely not a good thing. But I'm trying to promote that. Free speech. And my goals, I don't know if you're asking me about my goal, but what I'm doing in my work, I'm just trying to be a bridge. You know, I'm just trying to be a bridge between generations, like the older generations and the newer generations, the people that just got to America, that don't understand America's values, to the people that were born here, like yourself. You know, and I feel like as Vietnamese American, we have so much to offer. We're very unique in America. Like, we have so many people who are successful. We have generals, right? Vietnamese American generals and admirals in the military. We have scientists. We have a bunch of doctors and lawyers. We have, you know, to nail technicians. So we're contributing a lot to this society, to this country. And I feel like we're very unique in a way where we haven't maximized our potential yet. Right? And if we come together, we can do so many good things. We can do so many good things, bro.
Why do you think we have not been able to get together?
Because of our differences. Because we're not willing to have a conversation.
And we're not. This episode is brought to you by Songkhai Distillery, my only go-to gin company. Established in 2018, Songkhai Distillery is Vietnam's first gin distillery, founded by Daniel Nguyen, a Vietnamese American from Southern California. No matter how many people I have at my parties, we are always pouring Som Khai gin. Som Khai gin is handcrafted in small batches and prioritizes using botanicals and ingredients that are native and heirloom to Vietnam. The result is a product uniquely Vietnamese in taste and aroma. Som Khai is now growing to include rice wine and traditional Vietnamese herbal liqueurs similar to Amaro. Som Khai prides itself in Vietnam, from the farmers who grow the fruits and herbs to the artists behind the artwork and design. Som Khai is a community effort of people who are proud to be Vietnamese and collectively embody the spirit of Vietnam.
Willie,
what do you think is in our culture, in our water that we drink, that does not promote conversation? Because it's there. You're right. I'm not arguing about that. I agree with you.
I think it has to do, it has a lot to do with the eagles. Everybody have a big ego, you know?
But is it ego or is it cultural ego? Where it's Tui La Bac, Mai La Kong, right? That kind of culture, it's a cultural ego. You fuck with my position as a Bac, I have a problem with that. Even if you're right, I can't listen. I can't hear you because you're infringing on my cultural position as your uncle. I should know more than you because I have the title of Bac Tao La An Co Ba Mai, right? That kind of shit is what we don't ever talk about, Sean. That's the kind of cultural ego
that
we need to talk about. That's why I think that's one of the reasons why I don't think that, and I'm so glad we're talking about this because I didn't write this in my culture. I mean, my question sheet to you today was not about, but fuck it, we're here. And I think, I love the fact that you love to have discussion because we should be talking more to each other often about.
I know.
These things, yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot in common. I totally agree with you, you know. We have differences in every generation. And even my generation, right? The people that got here when we were young, we know a little bit of both cultures. Yeah. And we're just trying to fit in. We're trying to find our identities, you know, to even people like yourself, you know, were born here. As a matter of fact, I know a lot of people were born here and I talked to, and they have this perception where, what the hell do you guys know?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we were born here, man. We know everything about this country. What the hell do you guys know? So everybody is like, have different backgrounds.
Totally.
So it's kind of hard to come together, you know? It's really hard, man.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard to come together. And you are right. We individually have accomplished a lot. We have all accomplished a lot individually. But there's something missing that we cannot come together. And it's the cultural ego. There's egos that are existing between when you came to the United States. That kind of bullshit.
Yep.
Arrival ego, right?
Yep. Exactly. That plays a big part, you know? Like, when did you get here? Oh, 5 years ago. Oh, shit. What the hell do you know, right? Get out of here, man.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things, you know, we totally have a lack of respect for everybody. As a matter of fact, I know that people just got here less than 20 years ago, and they're doing very, very well now.
Better than some of these guys who were born here like me.
They're like the top 1%, not just in the Vietnamese American,
but
in the American community, in the top 1% that got here less than 20 years ago. I know some people are like that.
But the thing about the guys who are born here in their late 40s, sometimes they chưa có đụng vì the people you're talking about who've been here for 15 years, who are killing it.
Right.
They haven't seen it. They haven't been exposed to it. They haven't
seen
these hot shots that are coming from Vietnam that you know are doing big things. But that's the thing. We need to have that kind of recognition from the ones who have been born here or came early to see, wait a minute, these Vietnamese hot shots coming from Vietnam are a phenomenon. They are doing things that are like way beyond even the levels of the kids who are born here.
Absolutely. And if you give them a chance that, you know, if they were born here, they definitely can be president of this country for sure.
Kill it. Yeah.
So the thing that I'm fortunate about is that in my job, I get to talk to a lot of people.
Right.
I get to travel a lot. And when I talk to people, I understand their perspective, right? And I know where they're coming from. And a lot of people are just very low key, especially successful people. They're low key. They don't want to brag about themselves, right? So my thing is, if we can just like find, we don't need everyone. If we can find people that have a, you know, at least a common ground,
baseline,
at least willing to have a conversation, right? Then we can make a big impact to the whole group.
Yeah, I think there is this whole thing that we just talked about, the cultural ego, the arrival ego. But then once you get past that, there's also this idea of, I think, the natural tendency for Vietnamese people to be jealous of each other.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's always there, you know, it's always there. And that is one of the negatives, you know, about our people. The biggest thing is the ego. And the second thing is a jealousy, right? But if we can get rid of that, if we can understand each other and, you know, compromise, be willing to compromise for a common goal, then we can do so many, many things. You know, when I first started out, I was very naive, Ken. I was very naive because I thought that I could be the one who unite our community, you know, given the fact that, hey, man, I have my background, you know, I'm not just talk the talk. I walk the walk, right? I served this country for 20 years, man.
Yeah.
You know, at least in my mind, I had that feeling, right? That is something to prove.
Right.
That I'm not just here for show. And I'm actually want to start something. I want to use a big word, revolution or something.
Yeah.
You know, I want to unite our community despite all of the differences, right? From religions, from when the hell did you get to America, right? From, you know, from if you were here from the north, the south, or, you know, the central, to from like different side of politics. It's crazy all the differences that we got here. But I thought I could be the one to unite everybody and find a common voice. But I was too naive, you know? I got smashed in the face with that. And to some people, you know, they call me out. Some people say I'm even, you know, I have some fakeness trying to, you know, oh, this guy, he's nobody. He's trying to do this, do that. Oh, he's still young. You know, he's, you know, what does he know? Like, at least these are like older people than me. So it's really hard to change their mindsets. But that's when I first started out. But now, after a few years, I think I built up my reputation. The fact that, you know, when my big channel got shut down and I still have followers trying to find me, trying to search my name and try to get to my new channel. That says something. But I tell you what, this is a long road. And there's going to be a lot of challenges, a lot of obstacles. But we just have to be, you know, willing to fight this battle. We're trying to remove that roadblock one at a time, one at a time. And my effort, one of the goals is to try to find people with, you know, the common ground, at least trying to start a conversation like yourself. So that's really important to me now.
When you say that you were really naive and you really wanted to unite, you had to have a goal. You had to have an aim for there to be a failure. What was the aim? What was the goal that made you think that you failed or that people attacked that aim and that goal? You said that you were naive in the beginning, in the first mm-hmm. few years, you know, but your desire to unite and bring the community together, did you do something that you tried to bring the community together? Did you have a project that you put out there into the world of the community you lived in and it failed and you got pushed back? Or was it in the channel and in the spoken word that you were doing on your content?
Well, I was trying to help a political candidate.
Ah, got it. Okay.
Right. To be our voice.
Mm.
You know, go to Congress, because I always feel like that we're, as a Vietnamese people, individually, we're very successful in all kind of, you know, areas in this country. But there's one thing that we haven't touched yet. We haven't scratched the surface yet, which is like in politics.
Yeah.
We haven't got any real big names in Congress, right? So I was trying to support this candidate, which I still am.
Can you talk about him?
Oh, it's Mr. Hung Cao.
Okay.
Yeah. I try to support him. I'm still supporting him now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of pushback from that. You know, originally we were trying to have his, because he knows nothing about the Vietnamese community. Okay. I want to share this story with you.
Okay.
He got here when he was like 6 or 7 year old. He speak French, speak little Vietnamese, but he doesn't have a lot of understanding about the Vietnamese people. But we were willing to help him. So the first fundraising event or rallies that he's trying to come here to, you know, Southern California, and we're going to do a rally, do a campaigning for him. And we didn't know where to have the event at. So we figure out, like, okay, let's do, you know, his campaign manager was working with like somebody at SBTN.
Yeah.
You know, and SBTN is, you know, is not a Republican platform. You know, yeah. they lean left.
Very left.
Very left. So we got destroyed. We got destroyed for that. Right. Even though I talked about it in the beginning, I was very transparent about it. I didn't really think it's mattered that much, you know, because we are, as a Vietnamese community, we should not be divided like,
right,
like the rest of the Americans, right? At least we have the Vietnamese blood and we want to have a voice. We want to support a candidate. So it really doesn't matter where the event is going to be held at. But that was the first mistake that I made.
Okay, so
even
who protested that? The people in SBTN or the online people were...
No, the people that on the right.
What?
Yeah, the people, right?
On the right. Oh, I thought it would be people on the left. This is
exactly. Exactly.
People on the right were like, we have a problem with you doing it at SBTN.
Right.
Oh my God, that is crazy. Yeah, I would think that opens up the possibilities that people on the left can come and take a look at this.
That's what I thought.
That we came together.
That's what I thought, right? I didn't really care about your, you know, politics, your preference, if you're left or right. If you just show up to support our candidate, right? Mentally or financially, it's great. We have people there. It show our,
cohesion.
You know, yeah, cohesiveness. But then we get backlash from the people on the right. See, that's the thing. I lost a lot of my audience.
Because of that?
Yeah, yeah. During that time, I lost a lot of audience because they call me fake. They call me a rhino. Threw names and all kind of stuff. Which I didn't know a lot about SBTN. I didn't know a lot about the background, right? Because in my mind, I'm very naive because I'm just get out in the military. Yeah. I'm like, okay, whatever, you know, Vietnamese supporting Vietnamese, who cares? The same thing goes with Hung Cao campaign. They didn't care. So why would I? And I had nothing to do with the arrangement of the events. You know, I'm just a guy who promoting him.
Right.
But we got caught in the fire. So
that is such a dumb fire. That is such a dumb, ridiculous fire. You know, I thought it was going to be the left, you know, people and their audience going like, what the hell are they doing here?
Right.
Wow. I don't know.
I say the same thing. Say the same thing. But I learned so much. You know,
how long ago was that?
I would say that was in 2021 or 2000. Yeah, I think it's 2021 or beginning of 2022.
And Hung Cao is still running, right?
Yeah, he's still running now. He's running for Senate now.
If it's just a small group of people protesting, right? It can't be everybody on the right in Orange County. It has to be just be like a few people banging the drums.
No, there was a lot.
Oh, shit.
Especially YouTubers, right? The people that have the microphone. When they say something, that'll make an impact to their audience. And they start saying stuff. First, it was one. Then it was two. Then it was a few calling us traitors. You use all kind of names, right? And then the audience start to pick up, you know? And it just spread like wildfires. So that was the first big lesson for me. I lost a lot of audience during that time. But I think after a while, they start to understand, not all of them, but a few of them understand where I was coming from, that I didn't mean anything but the goodness for our community. I just want to unite our community,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
that's all I want to do.
And I love that about you, man. I love to hear that. And you know, you put your mouth where your words and your action is. You know, it's like doing it at SBTN is, for me, very symbolic that, you know, left, right, let's get together back home cow up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So what? Candidate. Right? Even if it were a, I might get in trouble for saying this, but even if we had a candidate from the left and his or her policy is all for the Vietnamese American and for the American people, benefit all of us, then yeah, why not? We should support them too.
Yeah.
You know, I might get in trouble for saying this because my platform is leaning right. You know, I was trying to protect the, you know, the conservative values where it was passed on to my grandpa, my dad, and then it passed on to me, and I'm going to pass on to my children. You know, it's all about God, country, and family.
Right.
You know, and I believe the family is going to hold everything together. We cannot lose that values. Otherwise, you know, things going to go so wrong in the society. You know, look at all the stuff that happening right now in California and across America, right? I don't want to go too deep in this
sure
political conversation. But I'm very open. I'm very open about that. You know, you don't have to be, you know, from the right. If you're from the left and you have a message that I like, then yeah, why not?
Okay, let me ask you something, Sean. How would you have done 2021 Hung Cao SBTN differently? Looking back right now, how would you, as a strategist, if you were a campaign consultant and you went back in time and you told Hung Cao and you told Sean Lay, these two guys, hey, what would be your strategy to do something like that in OC?
I would do it on my own. I wouldn't ask for anyone's help. You know, I would like book a hotel, like let's get a ballroom. Let's, you know, print out a poster. Let's, you know, get the tables. Let's get everything together. And we're just going to do it ourselves. We don't have to ask anyone else, you know. But back then I didn't have any experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I didn't know any better. I just barely got out of the military. I don't know this community. There's a lot of people that I haven't talked to, you know, so.
But looking back now, okay, so that's a great point that you bring up. You would rent a facility that has no political affiliations, right?
Right.
But now, looking back on it, would you have preferred that it happened or it didn't happen in your career?
Of course, I prefer that it didn't happen. But it happened for a good reason, so yeah, that I can learn, right?
Absolutely.
So now I have something in my notebook, like, okay, check. You know, now I understand our people more.
Yeah.
At least in our community, you know. So I believe everything happened for a reason, and the best way to learn is through experience.
I see your support for Hung Cao. I don't know much about Hung Cao. I think we all share a very strong military background. I lean a little bit left than you and Hung Cao. But that all being said, right? How can we put aside our politics and really learn about somebody like Hung Cao?
How do we do that?
Yeah, how do we do that as a group of people in the United States? We're Vietnamese Americans. How do we put this aside, in your opinion, and just go, you know, only put the blinders on, forget the politics. I just want to vote for somebody who, but first of all, can we from California even vote for Hung Cao? Because I think he's from Virginia, right?
Right. No, we can't vote for him, but we can donate.
How is it that we are all going to come together? Because you're right. There is no political candidate that is, and in order to make any changes for the Vietnamese community, you need to have politicians in the highest office here in the U.S. How does that happen?
Yeah, because I think the biggest reason is we as Vietnamese American, we don't have our goals
aligned,
defined, like clearly defined, or we don't know what our purpose is, right? Where do we go from here, right? We got here. We need to figure out who we are. Why are we here? What are our values? Where do we go from here? What are we trying to accomplish? And we haven't got those things clearly defined yet. And we're constantly fighting each other, you know, over some little differences that really doesn't mean anything, right? And we don't look at the common goal that we're trying to achieve because we don't know what we want to achieve.
What is it that we are trying to achieve, Sean?
What are we trying to achieve? Well, to me, at least come together and put away all the differences, you know, make a big voice in this country. Because when you look about it, when you think about it, like back in Minnesota, where I came from, you know, we have a small Somalian community. They're very small, nothing compared to the Vietnamese community. We have over 2 million people here, but they have a representative in the Congress. You know who I'm talking about, right? The woman representative in Congress representing the Somalian people.
Yes.
But as a Vietnamese people, we have nobody.
We had Joseph Anh Cao.
Well, he's not, he wasn't elected. Like he came in on a special election, but he didn't serve the full term. I'm sorry. That's what I mean. He didn't serve a full term of being a representative. And he, you know, the fact of the matter is he didn't do much impact to our community, at least.
Yeah.
We want somebody that have a voice in this country and somebody that we can lean to if we want to help the people in Vietnam. Right? For those that really interested, those are really concerned about a human rights issue in Vietnam. So we haven't got anybody yet.
Yeah, and they're not even on the horizon. You know, nobody on the map right now, other than Hung Cao.
Right.
You had Bing Wing out of Atlanta for a little bit there. There's not a whole lot of people in politics.
No, it's not. You know, and that's why I say when we have the opportunity to do so, why not? Why not try to support our candidate, you know? Why kill somebody over the place where the events is held? That's just so asinine to me.
What about you running? You ever thought about office?
No.
Wait, no, that you would not consider it, or no, you have you won't do it?
I wouldn't put my family to that.
But think about that. You know? Sean. Think about that. You wouldn't put your family. But here you and I are looking at everybody and going, why aren't people doing it? Well, for the same reasons why you won't do it and I won't do it, because we don't want to subject our families. We don't want to subject ourselves to the scrutiny of politics. So if we are not the example of doing it, how do we expect the service of other Vietnamese people in our community?
Well, we don't expect them to do it. But when somebody step up and qualify, right? I want to use that word carefully, qualify to be in the office, then we should put our differences aside and, you know, objectively assess them. If they're capable of doing the job, you know, if they are truly in their heart want to support, want to help, want nothing but goodness, you know, and growth to our community, then why are we not supporting them? This just doesn't make any sense. To me, we should support them, but we're not going to expect somebody to run, right? Because I'm, to be honest with you, I thought about politics. I thought about running for, you know, maybe mayor in the city.
Yeah.
But I just, it's just not for me because I need to do something that I'm passionate in. And doing this, having a conversation or supporting somebody is something that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't enjoy sitting in the office and
we are cut from the same cloth. When it comes to this, we love to talk. We love to exchange ideas. And I think both of us are kind of greedy for information. That's what we love. Mm. We love to hear it and to share the information that we get.
Definitely.
But to manage a city or a country or a state, that's another level.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I don't want to do it.
Well, I think that without... a goal for the Vietnamese American community, it's hard to pinpoint a direction in terms of going somewhere with the political agenda. And if you think about somebody like Hung Cao, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know anything about him. You know, I don't think most people know that Hung Cao is running. And what does it take to get him into the Senate position?
Well, we do know that he spent 20 years of his life fighting for this country. He was in the special team of the U.S. Navy. You know, he had so many recognition. He's a retired captain in the Navy, which is like a full-bird colonel, you know, in the Marines or in the Army.
Yeah.
Right. So we know that he put his life on the line for us. We have some common ground there. You know, we all veterans. And through some of the interviews that we conducted with him, you know, we kind of have a glimpse about his life, his personality and, you know, how he grew up and everything. And I could say the same to most of the candidates. Like, we don't know much about them.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know much about them. But what do we expect to know? That's the thing. When the candidate's running, they just put out, okay, here's what I'm going to do for the country. You know, here's my policy. Here's how I'm going to help the people. Here's how I'm different from everybody else. That's all we know. But at least for Hung Cao, we know he talked the talk, but he actually walked the walk, right? He did it. He's not a typical politician, a career politician. He's looking at things from outside of the box. At least that's what we know. It's just his personality is just, I don't know if you ever talked to him.
No, I would love to get him on the show. I'd love to get him
on
the
show. You should. Let me connect you with him. I think you would like his personality. He's very genuine.
Yeah, I'm open to hearing his, you know, perspective. And I think that anytime we get to have a glimmer of a politician, and you know, just if they're not too extreme one way or the other, I think that we could live with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really should get to know him, regardless of where the politics are. We should get to know why this person is running for a big office like this, and what impact does having his views come out into the world of our podcast and our work affect the future of Vietnamese American politics here in the United States.
Definitely. Definitely.
Sean, I want to tell you how wonderful it is to speak to you. It's kind of weird talking to you because I know the funny thing is like when I speak to you in English, I know like there's this Vietnamese brain in your head. Your thoughts are like very, there's a lot of angles in Vietnamese that I wish that I could talk in Vietnamese with you. I wish I was at the level to have that fun conversation that you often bring to your show. But I'm very content with, you know, being able to converse with you in English and having such a good time today. So thank you. And I look forward to speaking more often with you on my podcast and perhaps on your podcast.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Ken. And I hope I answer some of your questions.
Yeah, you answered everything, but I have more now.
And you have more?
Yeah, we'll save it for next year or in a few weeks, months from now. We can get on and chop it up some more.
Okay, definitely. All right, I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.